This is another episode of Stand Up Comedy, your host and MC, celebrating 40 plus years on the fringe of show business. Stories, interviews, and comedy sets from the famous and not so famous. Here's your host and MC, Scott Edwards.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode. We have a terrific show for you. I know I say that every week, but this one's extra special. One of the top comic ventriloquists in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Willie Tyler.
Ta-da!
Willie, so great to hear from you. We haven't chatted in a few decades, but you have always been one of the special acts that we were so lucky to work with, because you were already quite a celebrity when you came to Laughs Unlimited, and we got a chance to kind of take advantage of that and have you in many shows, and then we did the TV show. We're going to talk all about that. But hi, Willie. How you doing?
Hello. Hello, Scott. How you doing?
Doing great.
I remember. I remember the first time coming up there at the Laugh Talk in Old Sacramento. Old Sac, they call it.
Yeah, Old Sac. And it was a way that you helped establish us as a national comedy club, having people like you and Pat Paulson, Soupy Sales. We had a lot of celebrities like Leno, Carvey, and Seinfeld, but they were not known at the time. You were one of the few acts that we brought in that was already famous, was already a known act, and that was really a big deal to us. But let's give the audience a little bit of background. You got your start in Detroit, right?
Started in Detroit, I was at the age of 10, I started in Detroit.
Now, I was going to ask you, what made you pick ventriloquism?
Well, you know, we had just gotten a television set, black and white TV with the rabbit ears back in those days. And I'd seen a gentleman on TV. He had a weekly show called, it was Paul Winchell. Winchell Mahoney it was called.
Right,
and,
Paul Winchell.
I'd seen him. I saw him on TV with this little character, little wooden character, two characters, Knucklehead Smith and Jerry Mahoney. And I saw that and I said, hey, how does this doll talk? How is he talking? And it really fascinated me. So, you know, the very next day, I tried to emulate what he did. I took my sister's discarded doll and did a MacGyver, took a Copic saw and a straight pin and a rubber band and made the mouth move. And then I used that for a few weeks until I was able to get a store-bought one from a magic shop.
How cool is that? And you were 10?
I was 10 years old. I'm 10 years old, yeah.
Wow.
And I used to deliver papers to the Detroit Times. And I remember, this is later on, and I would always come home from school. I'd go to the paper, get out of school, go to the paper route, come home from school, and get in front of the mirror in the little den that we had there in our little house there. And I'd try to practice. My mom was ironing in the next room there. And I was doing the same stuff over and over and over and over and over again. She says, can you give it a rest now, a little while? You know, I said, okay. I could understand it because I was just saying the same stuff over and over. You know, when you're practicing, it's okay with you, but somebody's listening to it. You know,
might be a little annoying. Yeah, we all know about annoying kids. Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I've worked with several ventriloquists, and it is a combination of a unique art form and being able to write and be funny. But I have to say, and I know I don't want to offend any of the other ventriloquists I know and have worked with, but you were the best when it came to enunciating the difficult words without moving your lips. It was incredible to see you perform. So all those years of practice and annoying your mom paid off.
It did indeed, yeah. It was like a situation where when I first started out, it was sort of a strange situation because, like, when I was about 12 or 12 and a half, I started doing like little amateur shows around the city there. And have you ever seen a show called Showtime at the Apollo?
Yeah. Big show.
Yeah, it was like and in that show, they had a segment of the show where they had the amateur part. It was the amateur where amateurs would come out. And the audience would boo, they would heckle, and all that stuff. They did this at the Apollo for years in New York, but when they did the TV show, they put that segment in there. And I would do shows in Detroit back in those days. It was at a theater, and they would show a Class B movie, and then the lights would come up, and then they would show the amateur show. I mean, they would present the amateur show, and then later on they would introduce a professional act like the Hank Ballard and the Midnighters. Hank Ballard. Hank Ballard was the one that wrote the twist.
Wow! But, well, what a great way to start and validate your career.
Yeah, Chubby Checker covered it, and he made a hit. He made it a hit.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. But somebody else wrote it. But you actually, coming from Detroit, you must have worked with a lot of those Motown groups.
Yeah, I was signed with Motown. I was with Motown for like, I guess, 8 years. I was signed with them, but I still did some shows after that with them.
Well, you were a signed act?
Yeah, I got an album. It's called Hello Dummy. It's on the Tamla record label. That's a subsidiary of Motown.
I did not know that. That's impressive and really unique. That is cool. I mean, obviously, we've all heard of Motown albums, but I didn't know they did a comedy album.
Yeah. It was like I think Soupy Sales was with them for a while. Sammy Davis Jr. was with them for a while. But they weren't basically the Motown sound people, like the Supremes, Temptations, Four Tops, Little Stevie Wonder, and all those folks like
now,
that.
Now, did you end up getting to work with those musical geniuses?
Well, yeah, we used to, when it first started out, it was in the 60s, and when it first started out, the Motortown Review was just happening, so we would travel on the road, on a bus, Motortown Review, and the Supremes, Temptations, Four Tops, everybody. Well, the Four Tops, they traveled on the
and a ventriloquist.
Car, but, and we emceed. Lester and I emceed. We emceed the shows.
Well,
we traveled down to Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, and all those places. We would do big gigantic arenas, one nighters.
It's so interesting that you mentioned that, and I apologize. I didn't know about your past because we're going to talk about it in a few minutes, but you ended up emceeing one of our big TV specials, and I had no idea that you traveled that bus tour with those famous acts. And that also I'm going to bring up a little bit, but that might be why you love to sing.
Yeah, that's the reason I got into the singing, because what we do, Lester and I would emcee the show. We would introduce the acts. I think the Contours would always open the show. Do you love me? You know, they were always over the show because they were a physical act. They would do the splits, jump up and down on the stage, and all that kind of stuff.
High energy,
so it was a good opening
act.
But and then Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, and all the other Motown acts would be on that. But when I would introduce the act, and I come off stage and stand in the wings because I had to wait till they finished so I can go back out. And, you know, say, ladies and gentlemen, the Contours, you know, stuff like that with Lester. So, but every time I stand in the wings and watch all the acts, Marvin Gaye, Temptations, I watch them sing and I look out at the audience, and the audience, they were like enthralled. I say, hey, this singing thing, this must be something else. So what I did was like, I started putting just a few songs in the act with Lester when I didn't work with Motown, because they couldn't do it with Motown because they had hit records. I didn't have a hit record. Like, you know, it wouldn't fit. So when I would do other clubs, I would put the singing in there, in the act itself. So I enjoy the singing. It's fun.
Yeah, well, and you're really good at it. And I want to delve into that a little bit later. But I got to tell you, being able to work with that level of musical talent at that young age, were you awestruck? Were they friendly to you? I mean, you were part of the team. That must have been pretty amazing.
Yeah, what happened was like, I'll back up a little bit. What happened was like, I went in the Air Force. I was in the Air Force for 4 years. And when I got out, it was like 22, I think it was. Then I went back to Detroit. And then I think it was like about a year after I got back to Detroit, that's when I got with Motown. And because they were just beginning, it wasn't like, they didn't have any big acts. I think Mary Wells, My Guy, the song My Guy, I think that was the biggest hit that they had going there with the Motown people. And so I got with them. And it was like basically a situation where they had a meeting at Motown. They used to have meetings at Motown on Wednesdays. So they wanted me to come over on a Wednesday. I came over and I went into this room, and everybody, it's still a packed room in there with everybody in there. And I did about 2 minutes with Lester. And then I left. And then by the time I got home, they called me and said, hey, welcome to the Motown family.
Wow. You know, that must have just been an exciting moment in your life.
Yeah, that helped me a great deal being with Motown, because it helped me to get out of Detroit and get to do the Merv Griffin show, the Mike Douglas shows.
Well, we should
laugh in.
Yeah, we should let everybody know that this was in the 60s, but your real claim to fame in my mind, and you've had so many television appearances and so many successes, and again, a world-class stage act, but what really put you on the map, I think Motown laid the foundation, but what I think really pushed your career, and I want everybody in the audience to hear this, in 1972 and 1973, the last season of Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, you appeared in every episode, 24 different shows, and that was a huge hit show. I mean, I grew up on Laugh-In. My dad loved it. We thought that was one of the best comedy variety shows ever produced, and you were a regular that last season. That had to have been so much fun.
Well, that was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I enjoyed that. And at that particular time, I was still with Motown then. I was still with them. But I got that particular thing, and it was great. And what makes a Laugh-In a funny show is because they were little short bits. You know, everything was short.
Oh, right.
Less than a minute. Yeah, right. They're like little short things, and which kept everybody's attention. Because if you got something that lasts 4 or 5 minutes, then you tend to wonder. You walk away or whatever, but you don't know what's coming next. So it's the idea that's what made the show really popular. And I got to meet a lot of celebrities on that show too, because they had a lot of celebrities on there.
Oh, they really did. I mean, even President Nixon made an appearance. I mean, there was everybody and anybody wanted to make an appearance on Laugh-In, because that was really the comedy variety show of those years. And for you to be a regular act and be able to meet all those people, what a great way to really launch your career, because I'm sure that led to many, many more television appearances in the 70s. Like you said, Mike Douglas show, The Tonight Show, it goes on and on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I was doing the Mike Douglas shows before. That's how I really got Laugh-In, because by doing the Mike Douglas and the Merv Griffin shows. And they got wind of me through those particular shows, and
Laugh-In, and then Laugh-In led to others.
Other things, huh? But you know, it's a strange thing. You know, because David Letterman, you know, because I worked with him, you know, when he was at the Comedy Store out here. You know, he's the MC out here.
Right.
You know, he's the MC the Comedy Store in LA. But what happened was years later. They had a thing called Ventriloquist Week, you know. So it's like the idea. We were the first ones, Lester and I were the first ones to do the Ventriloquist Week. Now what happens, you know, David Letterman, his show was from the Ed Sullivan Theater.
Right.
In New York. Now, when I was growing up, I would watch the Ed Sullivan show, and I'd always say, I wish I could be on that show, you know. But then when I got to a point where I was able to qualified to be on the show, he retired, so the show went off the air. So I'm saying, I won't be able to be on the Ed Sullivan show. But what happened was, years later, fast forward, David was having Ventriloquist Week, and so I was able to be. I was the first one on Monday, you know, because Monday through Friday, but we were the first one, and it was a strange kind of situation that night. I went on stage. I did the act with Lester. And the audience was great. Everything worked. Everything was perfect. It just, everything worked out nicely. And in my mind, when I came off and I said, well, I wanted to be on the Ed Sullivan show, but I wasn't on the Ed Sullivan show. But yet, in a way, I was on the Ed Sullivan show, because we was in the Ed Sullivan Theater.
Yeah.
That's where the show came from.
I was going to say, being able to perform in the Ed Sullivan Theater, whatever show it is such an honor, and I bet you knocked it out of the park that show.
It was fun. It was like it's like a situation where everything went perfectly. It just went perfectly. And you know, another aside to this particular situation was going back to Ed Sullivan again. Now, I never did the Ed Sullivan show. Some people thought I did the Ed Sullivan show, but what happened was the Mercedes. They had a commercial, so we were in the Mercedes commercial. And you've seen things where they take personalities and they put them on video,
right?
And they lip sync, and put different things in their voice, in their mind. And anyway, they had Ed Sullivan there. Ed Sullivan was at the curtain. I mean, it's tape, you know, vintage tape.
Right.
And I forgot.
And they inserted you and Lester.
No, no, they inserted, I'm trying to think of the impressionist. He did the Ed Sullivan voice. I can't think of his own. Anyway.
Rich?
He did the Ed Sullivan voice. And Lester and I were in this Mercedes in the back of it. Somebody was driving it around. And Ed Sullivan was watching us drive around in the car. You know, and Lester says, it must be Mercedes. And Lester says, it is Mercedes, dummy. And then like a situation where, and then Ed Sullivan laughed. You know, we cut back to Ed Sullivan. So in a way, I was on the Ed Sullivan show.
Oh, that is so cool.
I wasn't on it, but I was on it.
Yeah, technology at its best. That's great. Already, as we've explained to the audience, you're already a celebrity. You're already doing lots of television appearances. And then I opened my club in 1980, and rather quickly, I brought you in because I like variety acts. I was one of the few clubs that didn't do just straight stand-up. I like variety acts. And I also like people that my dad liked. He kind of gave me his sense of humor. And you were one of those people. And in the early 80s, you started working for me. Do you remember those days?
I remember, yes. I remember because I used to stay at there's a hotel across the highway there.
Yeah, the Holiday Inn. Still there. Yeah,
right. I used to walk under the underpass there. You had to go under the freeway to get to the club. Something like when I didn't drive over, I just walk over.
Right. And nobody would have known because Lester's in a suitcase. So you just look like another tourist with a suitcase.
That's true. And when walking under the underpass, there used to be like kids used to hang out there, and they would play some place there would be playing music, and the kids hung out there and listened to that music, and too many kids were hanging out, so they start playing symphony music.
Right.
They start playing classical music, and then the kids didn't hang out there. They didn't hang out there anymore.
Oh, it's funny that you remember that because that was one of those things that took time over a couple of years to change in old Sacramento. And you were at the club so much, you were able to recognize those differences. That's a good memory, Willie.
And also, you know, what I remember is like, you remember the New Year's Eve shows?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you did two New Year's Eve shows.
Yeah, we would do a 7 o'clock.
You did one at 9 o'clock. That was for New York.
Yeah, New York New Year's. And then we did a 10 o'clock show that ended at midnight when we had a big California New Year's bash. And we were the only people we knew of that were able to celebrate two New Year's Eves in one night.
Right. And what I liked best, what you did was like you would hand out the noisemakers, but you would tell the audience before the clock struck midnight or whatever. So you say, do not blow the horns or anything like that until the countdown.
Well,
and the audience, they agreed.
Well, I'm going to correct you. I'm going to correct you a little bit because it was kind of a fun part about those shows. Willie is right. We would pass out noisemakers during the New Year's Eve shows, and I would go on stage and explain that we have some really talented headliners to entertain them for New Year's, and we don't want to interrupt their material with noisemakers and horns. But what I would do every time I was on stage as the MC, because I don't matter, I would let them blow their brains out on their horns and make all the noise they want, let them get it out of their system, and then introduce the next act.
They had gotten used to it, yeah.
Yeah, but, and they had a chance to make some noise and not interrupt the show.
Right, and so the reason I remember this is because I did a show downtown L.A. one time. It was New Year's Eve. It was someplace downtown here. And somehow or another, somebody handed out the noisemakers during my act.
Oh,
you know,
no.
It was almost, it was like 10 minutes to 12, and they started handing them out, and they started blowing. That's why I remember that. That stuck in my mind.
You know? Yeah, because they didn't do it right, and we did. Well, that's interesting.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, we've been talking now for a while, Willie, and I'm sure everybody's wondering that's in our podcast audience. Is Lester at home? Is Lester around?
Yeah, I got my earphones on. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, hey,
hi, Scott, how
Lester.
You doing?
Long how you time. Doing?
A long time no see. That's what the landlocked sailor said.
Well, I am so happy to hear you again, Lester. It's been many years. In fact, I had a couple questions for you. It has been over 20 years since I've seen you, and you look great. What's your secret?
Well, my secret is I just stay away from woodpeckers. woodpeckers and termites.
those would definitely age you, wouldn't they? Woodpeckers and termites. Well, Lester, you look amazing for your age, and I got to tell you, thanks for performing at my club so many years ago. But I was.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, it was our pleasure. But you know, you've been working with Willie, and I know he's still in the room, so I don't want to be indelicate. But you've been working with Willie for over 50 years. How's that gone? Do you like working with him?
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I could have gone out and on my own and done a line act.
Right. Right. If you went out on your own, it would be a mime act. You're absolutely correct. I was just hoping that after 50 years, you know, like some married couples and some business partners, things can get a little edgy. You guys seem like great friends.
Yeah, we're good friends. What's happening is like we don't see each other that much, unless we're talking on stage or something like that. We don't hang out.
Oh, so that's the secret.
We don't get on each other's nerves.
That's the secret. Have a little space in between. Well, that's really smart.
Remember the old saying, "Go away so I can miss you."
I'm going to have to try that. That sounds like it kept your friendship strong. Now, I was asking Willie earlier. Back in his Motown days, he got a chance to experience a lot of singers, and then later in his life, he started singing. But I know that you're a pretty talented singer as well. Do you prefer doing...
But I taught him.
Oh, you taught him?
I taught him. Yeah, I taught him.
Oh, I was wondering what you preferred, the comedy or the music?
No, I like all that kind of stuff. I like both.
Oh.
Because it's like, I think the singing part is like, it's fun. Makes you feel good. The music's playing and you're singing. That's fun.
And it goes well with the comedy. Yeah, it goes well with the comedy, I think. You know, a lot of comedy variety shows would have a comic and then a singer, and they do tend to work well together. But Lester, you're one of the few professionals that pull off both comedy and singing so brilliantly.
Well, I used to, when we were working with Motown, I used to watch Stevie Wonder and watch little Stevie Wonder back in those days and all the Temptations. And I learned from them. I just watched them, watched the music and everything like that. It made me feel real.
Willie, I know you're still in the room.
We're on speaker. I'm here.
You're both there. So did watching those guys kind of help train you as well as Lester?
Yes. It was just fun. The fun thing about singing music is like let's see, Ray Charles. It was like Ray Charles' 90th birthday anniversary. I think it was in September the 23rd, and it was like we did a video a tribute to him on his website, celebrating his 90th birthday. And on that in that particular little thing that we did, we talked about his songs. His songs made you feel good. It made you feel sad, and it made you, you know. And that's the same kind of thing with music. Music, it can be a situation
connects.
Where, yeah, a particular song can make you jump up and down and dance, and another one can make you just sit down and think about what happened yesteryear, what happened, the, you know, years before.
Yeah,
and
I think
stuff like that.
Music connects with people's emotions, and that's why. So many people like to sing and enjoy singing. And what's interesting is that you were a very talented or are a very talented singer, but you were a tremendous stand-up comic. I know, Lester, you had some great jokes in those days.
Yeah, I used to do the punchlines, and he used to do the. He was a straight man. And I was the guy that did the.
Oh,
punchline.
So that's why I remember you being funnier than Willie.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, I had one more question for Lester. If you got a minute, Lester, back in 1985, you, me, and Willie worked together on a Fox 40 TV special, a one-hour show. And we had you and Willie as the host of that show. We had some very big names like Dave Coulier and Dana Carvey on that show. But what was interesting, Lester, is I let you drive my pink Cadillac as part of the opening of the show. Have you done a lot of driving?
No, that was it. That was my first and last time.
Well,
if you watch the tape, you can see why it was my last time.
Well, I got to tell you, we do have all that on tape, and it was really exciting and a little scary for me as the owner, Lester. I got to be honest, to have you driving my car, but I was
that was a big car.
Yeah, it was a big pink convertible. It was an amazing car, but you did a great job driving it. And even though it was a little sketchy, you were a little heavy on the brake. There was no damage, and I just want to say thank you.
But I did. I was able to stop though.
Oh yeah, you did. In fact, if you remember, you kind of flung forward, and Willie had to save you.
Yeah, I stopped right in front of the club. We were almost late. That's why I had to jump out real fast.
Yeah, it was a real honor having you and Willie as the MC of that show. It was our first of three TV shows. We did two short series, one for ABC and one for NBC. But it was the Fox one-hour special. Having you as the professional MC really added some validity and style and class to that first production. So thank you.
That was a fun night, you know. We really liked that club because this idea, you know, the club was downstairs. Well, it's sort of hard to explain, but it was downstairs.
Basement level,
after
right.
After the shows, people would go upstairs. We had a little magic stuff going on.
The magic hat bar, right.
And so, right, and people would go up there after the shows, and we would go up there and hang out up there too also. It was a fun place to be.
I always thought, and in my personal experience visiting entertainment venues, I always appreciated it more if I had an opportunity. If I was willing to hang out, I could meet or chat with or thank an entertainer for the previous couple hours of entertainment. And the idea of the Magic Hat was not only a place to hold the audience before the show on a two-show night, but after the shows, celebrities like you and Pat Paulson and Soupy Sales and later on Bob Saget, Coulier, Leno could go up and actually meet the audience, and the audience would be so appreciative of that opportunity to maybe get an autograph or say thank you or just meet people that they really were impressed with on stage. And I'm glad you remember those days. As again, I can't emphasize enough how important it was to the history and the success of the club to have an act.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Well, having an act of your stature made a difference.
Dave Coulier, he was from Detroit. I think he's from Michigan, right, Dave?
Yes.
Because I met him a few times, and he knows me, I know him. Well, speaking of that, you know, it's like, we're doing a documentary. We're working on a documentary, so eventually that'll be out. So it's like it's been years in the making, but it'll be out eventually.
Does it have a title so we can tell people?
It's Hello Dummy.
Oh, Hello Dummy. Okay.
Mr. Excitement? What's his name? He passed away. I can't think of his name. Oh boy.
Well, that's okay.
Anyway. We got a sizzle, what we call a sizzle reel, and people can go and see the little excerpts from it. It's hello-dummy.com.
Oh, okay. Well, everybody out there in the podcast land, hello-dummy.com. Be sure to check it out. I will do that.
And it's like it's a nice documentary because it's with a lot of other entertainers that we work with, and they talked about.
Well, I can't wait to see it. And I want the podcast audience to know that we do have some terrific material by you and Lester at the end of this interview to share with them. So they are going to be able to get a chance to hear some of your terrific comedy. Now, you were, as we've mentioned a couple times, a huge entertainer to have come into the club in the 80s and 90s. But I did sell the club and move on. In the last 20 years, I know you've continued to do something like 12 different television appearances. And I know you're still a hardworking stage comic. Now, the last thing I saw was in 2019, I think it was, you did a show. You were a host or regular on The Kids Are All Right. Does that sound right?
No, we were on that particular show. It was an episode on that show.
Oh,
the Kids Are All Right.
Okay.
It was one episode, but it's sort of strange because that show, The Kids Are All Right, it takes place in the 60s. It took place in the 60s.
Oh.
And then one of the kids in the household, he was a ventriloquist, and I was his mentor. I mean, he would watch me on TV. Being in the 60s, he would watch me on TV, and he would always walk around in some episodes with this little character, and he'd always talk about Willie Tyler and Lester.
Wow, you know? That's so a nice tribute.
Right, and the last season of the show, they had me come on, and what happened was his brother went to Vegas. And somehow or another, his brother lost his brother's ventriloquist figure, you know. And so what happens, like, they finally sent the figure to their house, but it wasn't his figure. It was my figure. It was Lester.
Oh.
They got him mixed up.
Lester showed up in his house.
Yeah, he has Lester, and I wound up with his character.
Oh.
So it was like a situation where, he had Lester. And then they look at TV and they see me on TV with his little redheaded character.
Oh, that is a great way to do it on the show.
That was nice for them to do that, you know, to put us in there as his interest.
That's a terrific tribute, Willie. And it's been mentioned several times, you are one of the best ventriloquists out there. Ventriloquism seems to be having a little bit of a comeback. You are still one of the main examples of how to do it right on television. I did want to ask, in the last 20 years, I know you did that show. Was there anything else that you've done that was you'd like to share with the audience or you're especially proud of?
Let's see. We've done down through the years, you know, we've done a whole bunch of things. We did a thing with Diana Ross and Supremes years ago at the Hollywood Bowl. Not the Hollywood Bowl. There's a particular show place in Hollywood here where each Saturday night somebody would host the show for an hour, and we did it with the Supremes when the Supremes hosted the show.
Wow.
And on that show was the Jackson 5. And Stevie Wonder and Sammy Davis Jr.
Wow. So like that, right? That's a terrific group of people to work with.
Mm-hmm. And I did the Tonight Show with, you know, Johnny Carson, when he was doing the Tonight Show, he would take some time off sometimes. And a guest host would come on. And Sammy Davis Jr. was guest hosting that particular night. And I was able to do the Tonight Show with Sammy Davis Jr.
Wow.
But the reason, I was up in Lake Tahoe.
That's a legend.
With Sammy.
Yeah.
Yes, I was working with Sammy up in Lake Tahoe, and he came in the dressing room one night. He said, "Hey, I'm doing a Tonight Show next week. You want to do it?" And I said, "Oh, of course. I mean, yes, indeed." You know, so that's how I was able to get that particular thing. But I work with I like working in show business. I work with all kinds of actors. Dolly Parton, you know, it was like Glenn Campbell. You know, it's like a whole bunch of people. Fifth Dimension, and all those folks.
You've had a tremendous career, Willie. I hope you take pride in what you've accomplished because it's very impressive. And
go ahead.
I was just going to say, even though you got a chance to work with all those celebrities, you're a celebrity, and so you fit in naturally with the names that you're dropping. Willie Tyler and Lester could fit in that list, and just as easily as anything else. That was a real tribute to your success.
Uh-huh. Oh, by the way, the actor I was trying to think of before was Don Rickles.
Oh, Don Rickles.
Don Rickles. No, Don Rickles did an album called Hello Dummy also.
So it's like, did he really?
But he did it years after I had the same title.
Right.
You know, it's different though. Yeah. But it's like Don Rickles. But he was the one. Sometimes when you go to the internet, you'll find Hello Dummy, but you'll see Don Rickles.
Well,
as opposed to Hello,
it's good that it's good we explained that to the podcast audience. Now, I want to have everybody listen to one of your sets. But before we get to that, I had one last serious question. As a ventriloquist, I've seen on TV and met personally many of them, and a lot of those ventriloquists will have multiple ventriloquial figures. In other words, they will use several, I hate to use the word dummies, on stage because a lot of times they're smarter than the ventriloquist. But the ventriloquial figures, many of the people out there now have multiple characters, but you have stayed and sharpened your skills and your wit with Lester. Was there ever any thought of doing multiple characters, or are you just so comfortable and have such a good friendship with Lester that it worked?
When I first started out, I would try to put another character. Matter of fact, I bought a figure, ventriloquist figure one time, and I never used it. It just sat until it disappeared. I don't know what happened to it, but I never used it. But so it got to a point where I said, well, what I'd like to do is like put all the energies, instead of watering it down into other characters, I put all the energy into Lester. So people, he has a personality now, so people know Lester. So it's not like his personality is watered down into other characters. So it's just all the energy is put into Lester. That's why he's so popular. People know him because of that.
And I alluded to when I was chatting with Lester a few minutes ago, he has his own celebrity, his own fame, and I think that comes to that focus that you put on that relationship and that character. And I was just curious, though, if you ever dabbled with others, and it makes perfect sense, and it paid off that you have been able to create this, like you said, this personality that lives today.
I mean, for other people, you know, it works for them, you know, and they're comfortable with that. But it's I've always been comfortable with just having Lester. And it's the idea, because I can just put all the energy into everything, into that particular character.
Well, you've done a great job. You've had an amazing career. We really appreciate you being on the podcast and sharing it with us. But before I share a comedy clip of you and Lester, is there a way that you and Lester could lead us out of this podcast with a little bit of a song?
Let's see. I've got to think of the song. Let's come over here. Let's come here. He's over there at the computer. Yeah. Yo. What's up? We're gonna. Scott wants us to do a little musical thing, real short thing. What are you gonna do? Let's see. Okay. Here we go. What goes around comes around again. What goes around comes around again. How's that?
That was great. Wow. Lester, thanks so much for sharing a little bit of music with us.
Thank you.
You just keep it up, buddy, and we're going to make you look good with some comedy right now. Willie, Lester, thanks so much for joining us on this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, sit back and relax and enjoy some great stand-up material by the one and only Willie Tyler and Lester. Thanks, Willie.
Thank you. Thank you.
Lester, look out for that guy. I'm doing all right, man. Just leave me alone. Watch the bump. Lester, you gotta watch this bump. No, we got another bump, man. Watch. Stop the car. Get my face off the wheel, man. Watch that guy. Watch that bump. Turn left. Do that. Do this. Look, man. I got a show to host. I'll tell you what. You pop the car. I gotta go.
Yes, wait a minute. Look, I...
Well, wait a minute, Les, wait a minute. I'm hosting the show, too. Hey, Les. How did he do that?
Why? Almost. From Laughs Unlimited, it's an evening of comedy with your hosts, Willie Tyler and Lester.
Thank you very much, and a pleasant good evening to everybody, right?
Right, welcome to our Laughs Unlimited, right? Live, you know what I mean, man?
Yeah, did you park the car?
The car's parked, don't worry about it. By the way, we got a nice parking lot outside, a lot of security. We got an announcement. Is somebody here tonight who has license plate number 16849? Your lights are gone. But I noticed you got a microphone there, right? Yeah, you know, some watching people watching your mouth, man. You know, you really can't tell by watching his mouth. Don't watch his mouth, see? Because sometimes his mouth is not moving. My mouth is not moving. And people are saying, where in the hell is the sound coming from? Now, another thing, you know, willpower and determination. You're into that, right? Like, now, I always say this a lot, see? When you got the willpower, you got the determination, you know, you can do it. Now, first of all, I will give you this. I want you to hum what I just did, huh? Hum what I just did. Pick me up, man. Oh. You better wake up, man. How's that? That's good. Now, what are we going to do now? No, wait, hold it. That's the easy part. Wait a minute. Okay. Now, what are we going to do now? We're going to give you what we just did simultaneously. This I got to see. Okay, now when I point to you, I want you to do the exact same thing that you just did. Are you ready? Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. Now watch me. Okay. I'll nod. Okay, good. Ladies and gentlemen, right now we'd like to get our show moving down the road of success this evening, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, we're going to introduce a gentleman who does, I guess he does voices, and he does, you know, like basically sound effects. You know, he's got his own cable show, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, are you ever doing any sound effects and things like that?
I got a good one there.
Chirp, chirp, yuck, yuck. Chirp, chirp, yuck, yuck. What's that? It's the early bird catching the worm. What's the yuck for?
You ever eat a worm, baby?
Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Mr. Dave Coulier. Come on, lay it on him.
That was Willie Tyler and Lester from the opening of our Fox 40 TV show special back in 1985. And as you heard, that was Lester driving the car up to the club in the beginning of the show. And then Willie Tyler and Lester doing a little opening bit before they introduced David Coulier, who appeared on that show. But we have a little bit more material from Willie Tyler and Lester, so sit back and enjoy this.
You know, I got a bone to pick with you, man.
A bone to pick with me?
Yeah, about the computer dating service.
Oh, that's right. I told you about that. How did things work out?
I went there, told them my interests, my dislikes, my physical attributes, and everything.
And who did they match you up with?
A coffee table.
Let me ask you, are you into football?
I love football, man, but last year I watched so much football that I had a nightmare.
You had a nightmare?
Yeah, I dreamt I was locked in a room with all the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders, and I couldn't get out.
What's so bad about that?
They all had chainsaws.
Let me ask you something. I got something else to ask you. My partner, Les, folks, is very quick, very witty. Now, when it comes to anything, he can handle it because he's like, his mind is like a steel trap. We're going to try it out. We're going to take you back to what we call old-time radio. Now, I'm going to show you. He'll make these things up just like that. Remember? Why, hang on. Taking you back now to Sergeant Preston of the Northwest Mounted Police. On King! On you, Huskies! That's right,
yeah.
Now, watch this. taking you back once again, turning the dial. You get this. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past come the thundering hoofbeats of the great horse Silver. The Lone Ranger rides again. Would you mind leaving the folks the last word so we can get into this little song that we're going to do? Yeah, be so kind. Folks, I'd like to leave you with a heady last word. Remember, keep your ear to the ground, and somebody will step on your head. Meister, if you please.
Ladies and gentlemen, always funny, always professional, and always such a treat to have on my stages. That was Willie Tyler and Lester doing a comedy set from back in the 90s. I know you enjoyed that, and I hope you enjoyed the interview. It was a thrill to get Lester on the line with Willie and do a little singing, something a little extra special. Hey, thanks for joining us on this podcast. There'll be another new one next Sunday. You guys take care. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Stand Up Comedy, your host and MC. For information on the show, merchandise, and our sponsors, or to send comments to Scott, visit our website at www.standupyourhostandmc.com. Look for more episodes soon and enjoy the world of stand-up comedy. Visit a comedy showroom near you.